Well, you know, some days doing the collector show are easier than others. I had earlier today completed recording most of the news segment for the show, and the door where I do the recording opened, and it was the dog, and it just completely threw me off my game. So if I sound a little disoriented, that's why. Because I wasn't expecting anybody, never mind the dog, and who knew the dog could open doors. Well, anyway, welcome to the Collector Show. I'm Harold Nickel. Coming up in the interview segment, we're going to be talking with Jet Whitehead, who all the way from Michigan will be talking to us about collecting books. He'll be describing his love of literature and poetry and how he combined his love of both of those into a business. Jet's a really nice guy. I had fun talking to him. You will enjoy hearing from the poetry Jet Whitehead as well. Of course, just like every week, it's the news. Did you know, because I didn't, that crystal, as in like Waterford or Baccarat, that it evolved from confection, like candy? The first crystal confections were commissioned by czars and emperors. And the same companies, the same crystalleries that made all of those beautiful and delicious designs are working with some very fine and contemporary designers to produce new cutting-edge, pun intended, collections. So if you're looking into your crystal ball and you want to know what's next to collect in terms of luxury items, it is crystal. And there's lots of it. You're going to want to look for it in decidedly more contemporary shapes than what we've seen before. So many of the crystal objects and collectibles are just a little unfashionable. So put those away and head to a place where you can get Baccarat or Waterford and get some new modern designs. There's a story, if you want to read it, from the Telegraph, and the luxury section of the Telegraph is devoted to crystal. And this stuff is really expensive, but, there's a lot of things we talk about on the program that are not expensive at all. This will be one of the exceptions. There's a book also, a coffee table book, Baccarat 1764, 250 years of Baccarat. So look for that if you want to know more about collecting crystal. There is a event in a place called Emerald City, and one of my pet peeves about people who publish online is quickly becoming the fact that there is no such thing as a dateline anymore. If you're going to write, put where you are, the state, please. The Emerald City Comic-Con has a lot of really cool things, and I would love to tell you all about it, but for some reason, the people who wrote the press release did not include the location. So, if you knew where it was, God love you, and let me know. All right, then it gets weird. There's a guy in a place called Hampton. Once again, no state, no country, just Hampton. Jeremiah Pasternak's love and obsession started when he was young, and he was immediately blown away by something revolutionary and very cool and very technological hugging his toes. He's talking about sneakers. He started very early in life collecting sneakers and toys. Well, Mr. Pasternak, who runs Pasternak Antiques in Hampton Falls, in some state somewhere, with his father, also collects Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle action figures, and he's going to be featured on the Travel Channel's Toy Hunter. Pasternak will be on the show for the first time, and producers have asked him back because actors, performers, singers were looking for different types of rear toys and shoes. Who knew that those two went together, and found Jeremiah Pasternak. So, if you haven't seen this on the Travel Channel program yet, you'll want to look for it. I wanted to put this on because of the fact that I had never seen or heard of a collection of shoes and toys. You know, we've talked about toys before plenty of times. We've never talked about shoes, and we've definitely never talked about both. There's a guy who does a radio show on a radio station, WZLX. I could probably find out where it is if I wanted to. But once again, there's no dateline. Anyway, the fella, or one of the men who works there, has a program every Sunday morning devoted to the Beatles, and he has an autograph of George Harrison that he originally bought back in the 70s for about $300, and it's now worth $5,000. Here's what's interesting. There are plenty of Beatle autographs of the band members individually. Very, very few of all four Beatles on the same space, on the same album cover, the same book. Very rare indeed. So if you know of one, let me know, because I'd like to talk to whoever might have it. Well, let's talk about some of the best new board games, because these ultimately will become collectible. It's also interesting that everything old is new again, as I continue to weave the thread of baby boomers recreating their childhood through the program. The My Little Pony collectible card game does just that, and according to the reviewer, it's pretty good. In 2010, the 80s children's TV show enjoyed a reboot, and the new generation of ponies developed a legion of adult fans and entertained young people as well. So if you grew up in the 80s watching My Little Pony, there's a new card game. Now, if My Little Pony's not your thing, it's okay, because there's another card game, board game called Sails of Glory. And according to the review, magnificent tabletop battles are played with detailed miniature chips. There's an innovative game mechanic that delivers the battles amid the waves. It's complex and expensive, but rewards investment. So it sounds like fun. And then there's another one more accessible than Sails of Glory called Battle Lore, a fantasy-themed battlefield-based war game. It's time-consuming to set up, but it's quick to play. So when you're looking for new collectibles, if crystal's not your thing, maybe board games are. Now, speaking of games, there's a new game called A Game of Thrones, the card game. I'm very late to this party. We've only just started watching Game of Thrones at our house. I think we've seen two of them. It's really good. If for no other reason than you could keep the characters straight, I'd get this game, because there's lots and lots and lots of different characters. And in the card game, they have the names of the characters and they describe what they do. So beyond the fun of playing a card game, you can keep who's who straight in Game of Thrones. So, and it premiered this week, and don't write to me with spoiler alerts. Please. Please don't. Okay, lastly, a month-long show of vintage pedal cars opens at the Attleboro Arts Museum, and we are very, very close to getting the curator of this event on the collector show. So hopefully next week we will have a segment, interview segment, on pedal cars. So hopefully that comes together and you can come back and listen to that. All right, so kind of a slow news week in the week of collecting, or in the world of collecting, rather. No spoiler alerts for Game of Thrones, though, okay? Coming up, the Poetry Jet and collecting antiquarian books here on the Collector's Show with me, Harold Nickel, here on Web Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. Well, welcome to the interview segment of the Collector's Show. We're going to be exploring a new type of collecting books, but not just any kind of books. antiquarian books. We're going to be chatting with Jet Whitehead, or as he is known, Jet Poetry. And welcome to the Collector Show, Jet.
Thank you very much, Harold. It's so nice to be here with you.
Well, we're glad you're here with us. It's a new topic for us here on the Collector Show, not just books, but what are described as antiquarian books. I know that for me, I don't collect books. So help us get a grasp of what an antiquarian book is and how that can be distinguished from a regular book.
Well, today the term antiquarian generally implies any books that are rare or collectible. And often we get into uniqueness and so forth. But the word itself, antiquarian, of course, is a derivative term from antique. And I suppose years before Harold and Jet walked the earth, book collectors who were collecting antiquarian books truly were looking for old books. But today, book collectors are collecting books that indeed may be 100, 200, 500 years old. They may be collecting books that were just very recently published because of their uniqueness.
Okay, so am I hearing right that it's more uniqueness than age?
Correct.
So as we look at uniqueness, there are all different types of press. There could be like what's called a vanity press, or books that are published by well-known publishers. What type are we looking for if we're going to embark on an antiquarian book collection?
Well, you know, interesting that you mentioned vanity press. A rare book collection certainly could include some vanity presses. As an example, and as your introduction alludes to, I'm known as Poetry Jet. My website is poetryjet.com, and though I'm an antiquarian book dealer, I deal exclusively in poetry. So that's where I'll keep, as we're having our chat today, I'll keep driving it more toward poetry, just primarily because that's where my interest is, and that's where my background is. But with vanity presses, a lot of poets who are looking to have their work published and they can't find the attention with some of the big major publishing houses have their first one, two, or three books published by vanity presses. So it would not be uncommon to have a really fine antiquarian book collection with some beautifully published pieces. But also there's a few simply published pieces from a vanity press.
Yeah, and I guess, too, that vanity press, maybe that sounds a little negative. Maybe self-published is a better way to say it.
That's a much nicer term. You're right.
So I might be, like you, someone who is a fan of poetry and certain poets. And so I would go out and try to find books, whether self-published or otherwise, by that particular poet, and that would be the start of my collection. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, it is. Some people become book collectors really without realizing what they're doing. They enjoy books. They enjoy handling books. They enjoy reading books. They use them for reference pieces. And as time goes on, they just continue to accumulate books, and then they start to refine where their interests are and then become more book collectors rather than just book accumulators.
It's interesting. But, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, well, for people who want to become book collectors, it's well that you don't try to eat the whole pie at once, but to focus on either a subject that has a real interest. Perhaps you have a strong interest in gardening, then you might want to start a book collection on gardening books. But if your interest in literature involves a few different authors that you really like, pick one author And in my case, what got me started was I had a deep interest in the work of the poet Robert Frost. And so I just started collecting Robert Frost and go from there.
Yeah, I think that along the lines of what you're saying, I think I may have accidentally or unwittingly become a book collector. I've always been interested in advertising, media, public relations, media relations, and things like that. And I've got dozens and dozens and dozens of books on that topic. I never set out to be a book collector.
Sure.
But it sounds like I've ended up with a pretty good collection.
Yeah. And probably because you've collected these books because of a real sincere interest, there's probably a few authors in the books that you've collected that really resonate with you and that you think really are right on, and maybe then a few other authors that maybe they missed the mark. And so if you wanted to pursue this book collecting, you might want to go back to those books that really spoke to you and try to collect as many of the books by that one or several authors and try to collect the best copy you can find, best meaning the best condition, and try to get a copy of the first edition of that book. And perhaps you'll get lucky and start finding copies that were signed or inscribed.
That's so interesting that you say that, because what you just described is pretty much what I've done. There was a guy back at the start of the 20th century whose name was Edward Bernays, and he was the, the self-proclaimed inventor of the public relations trade. Well, uh-huh. I've got a copy of his autobiography. It's very hard to find, and I have copies of all of his other books, and most of them were published in the 20s and 30s, and I found them on, places like eBay and
sure.
and places like that. So, but it was never because I was keen to be a book collector, just because I happened to be interested in this particular guy.
Right.
So,
and you might want to carry that ball then a little bit and work with some book dealers, people such as myself, and try to find more material, some manuscript material or some letters by this gentleman.
Oh, that's such a good idea, and something I really would want to pursue, because although not a household name by any stretch of the imagination in the world of public relations, he's the founder, godfather. And it was interesting because he sort of just decided to start calling himself that, and everybody agreed. So, but that kind of helps me get my head around the way you could back into a book collection and how we could pursue a topic like media or public relations or an
sure.
author. But let's talk about other types of collections that maybe didn't start with a certain writer or poet, as you were describing. What about different eras or years? Are there people who collect books that say were published in, I don't know, pick a year, 1880 or something like that?
There's certainly, I don't think you and I could come up with an example that doesn't exist. There are people who are collecting just about anything. Although collecting in an era is not necessarily the most popular way to go. That being said, one of the most popular areas of collecting is referred to as modern first editions. And a modern first is a book, different people will give you a different time period, but basically books that began being published around the beginning of the 1900s. And book publishers started publishing in a slightly different way and appealing a little more we wouldn't want to call it mass market, but to a broader market. And also that's about the time when dust jackets started appearing on books. So there are people indeed and dealers who specialize in collecting modern first editions.
Yeah, I know that the dust jacket is a sore subject with me, because I hate them, and because they're just in the way. And
a lot of readers do hate them.
I throw them away, but you know what? I bet that makes books that come with dust jackets that are intact, I bet it makes those more desirable.
Oh, it certainly does. I use the example often, and people can understand it. If you are collecting antiques, and most people have even if they're not antique collectors, there's an antique shop in their town, and they have an idea of what goes on in the antique shop. If you go to an antique shop, and there's a particular type of china that you think is very pretty, and you happen to see a really pretty china teacup, and there's not any chips on it, and it's really nice, and you think, boy, that must be valuable. If the saucer is not there, it really has no collectability. I mean, it was probably something that might be have a dollar price tag on it. But if it had the saucer, which really doesn't do too much as far as the teacup is concerned, but it's got to have the saucer. And so when you toss away the dust jacket, it's like tossing away the saucer to your good china.
Yeah, and one of the areas we struggle with in all types of collections is what separates a collectible from junk, and I think or garbage, frankly. And I think the example you just gave is really solid. I want to shift gears, Jet, for a minute, and I want to talk about the digital age.
Sure.
And we all know that digital devices for reading, for working on the internet, for watching movies are ubiquitous. And it made me wonder about the interest in printed materials juxtaposed against the digital age. And I would bet that interest in print is high and going higher. Is that something you agree with or not?
Well, I think we're a little too early to make that statement or that prediction. But if part of what makes a book collectible is its scarcity, what you have just suggested is absolutely true. How I compare the two, the digital versus the printed book, digital is terrific. It's wonderful for text. And if the user's primary interest is just finding out what is the author saying, and they want text, getting it digitally is just as good a way as any. But when you get to that point where you want more from what that author has done than just the text, and you want to see what the book looked like when it was first conceived, when it was first published and brought out into the world. And it's pretty hard to, just kind of taking a sidebar here, it's pretty hard to take your digitized piece and have the author sign it.
Boy, isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's even for myself, I consider myself to be an early adapter when it comes to technology.
Mm-hmm.
But I really prefer even casual reading to read a book. Last night I was reading a book, and I like to underline and make notes in the margins. And sure, I can underline in the digital, but it's kind of a pain, and
sure,
I can't make notes. So
that's right.
You know, but even with all that said, I still think that regardless of what I think or what anybody else thinks, my guess or my prediction is that as reading materials of all types go digital, there'll be another unintended consequence that the interest in collecting print is going to go up, which, you know, for someone like yourself who's in the rare book business is good news, or have I jumped to that conclusion too soon?
No, I don't think jump to the conclusion too soon. I certainly think that the world of collecting books is going to continue, and it's an interesting topic that comes up among many book dealers. You know, my colleagues and different dealers will take on different feelings toward that subject, but the collectability of a book has been important to people who truly love books for years. And I don't think just because we have the text available digitally, people who really have an interest in books, that's just not going to wane.
Yeah, I really agree with you. And my grandmother, who passed away a couple of years ago, is the one who really helped me develop an interest, not just in reading, but in books themselves. And she was all about learning, and the link between printed materials and things that you can, you know, scribble in or underline, like I talked about earlier. I don't think there's any substitute for that, but maybe that's just me.
Well, when you, I would like to interject. When you when we're talking about collectible books, one thing that you usually don't want to do is scribble in them or
yep.
highlight in them or underline. And I know that's what so many people do with their books, but just so you and your and our listeners who hopefully are enjoying this chat today, put away your pens and your highlighters if you're going to start collecting these books.
Well, that's a good word. And at the end of everything, you know, the show is called The Collector's Show. So in that instance, do like we say and not like we do.
Sure.
So let's talk also then about, you know, the business aspect, because you mentioned that, you know, marking up the book is, or throwing away the dust cover is a sure way to make certain that whatever it is you have will not be desirable at all. But on the other hand, if you're a smart collector and you preserve the dust cover and the spine and protect your printed materials from moisture and air and light, you could have something that's valuable. My personal theory, and I want to see what you think, is that there's just some businesses that are recession proof. And what I think I've observed here lately is that the antique business, the auction business, the estate business, I think those are all pretty recession-proof. And I'm wondering if perhaps the book business is similar to that. Do you have any thoughts along those lines?
Well, you know, I do. And I don't really think, and I do have a business background as well as a literature background. I wouldn't say that the book business or the antiques business is recession-proof. I think the interest that people have in collecting books may be recession-proof, but their income is not recession-proof. Mm. And people can have a strong interest and want to, you know, continue collecting, but if their jobs become, you know, if somebody's working hourly and all of a sudden they're only working 20 hours a week instead of 40, you can live, although I don't like to think about it, but you can live without collecting books and without collecting antiques, but you really do need to put the bread and butter on the table. So books are something that people can say, well, I can go to the library, check out a few books to read, but I don't need to be spending money and buying.
Yeah, while I commend you for your candor, I don't think that's the marketing slogan you want. But but
true.
No, I think that's a good. If people are working less, obviously they're earning less and they have less income to devote to their hobbies, and that's too bad. And I'm confident, though, that things will eventually turn around. And you mentioned that you have a business background and you also own a business. And I always like to talk with people who have taken an interest in their collecting hobby and turned it into a business. Tell us about your store and how we might be able to learn more about you and the antiquarian books that you offer for sale.
Well, when I was going through high school, and my dad was in business, and I greatly admired him. He was a great friend, and I admired him in what he was doing in business. But I was also really enjoying my English classes, and I started writing poetry in high school. I had my first poem published in high school. And so when I went off to college, and bless him for it, Dad made sure that there was always tuition and room and board money available to me. So my declared major and what my degree is in is business administration. But I found that I was hanging out in the English department an awful lot and getting to know the writers that were in the English department, and I was taking creative writing classes from them. So by the time I finished my business degree, I knew my heart and soul was really more toward writing and poetry. So I went to graduate school and pursued that interest and received a master's degree in creative writing and poetry. But I never gave up the real, you know, being a realist in that you've got to earn some money, and the likelihood of finding a publisher who will send you enough money to live on throughout your life is not very strong. It happens to a few people, but very few. So I was through a lot of luck and also trying to keep my options open. I merged those two ideas and became a book dealer.
Well, I say congratulations to you for being able to navigate that, because as you say, it's rare. I like to write too, but I ended up writing and doing public relations and advertising. So there's only a few people who are lucky enough to have enough original ideas to go get published. And in my case, it was really the only path forward. But I admire people who like to write and who stick with writing. And I'm not sure, and I don't think this has anything to do with collecting, but writing is very hard work. And I don't think people appreciate that.
That's right. It is. Through the years, particularly because I've been a book dealer and having a specialty in modern poetry, many of the authors' books who I sell, those authors are still alive, and over the years I've been able to get to know a lot of them. And you're right, it's a very, very tough career.
Yeah, it takes everything I know. I'd be remiss if I didn't thank my friend and my former colleague at the Dow Chemical Company, Mike Coleth, who is actually the person who put me in touch with Jet. So, Mike, I know you listen. Thank you. And
yes,
before
indeed.
We go, Jet, tell everybody how they can find you online and how to be in touch.
Well, if you're looking to find me online, I'm at poetryjet.com, and I'll spell that poetryjett.com. My first name is Jet, J-E-T-T. And if you're looking for books other than poetry, I can strongly recommend going to the website of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America. And their website is ABAA.org.
Outstanding.
And I thank you, Harold, very much. This has been fun.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed visiting with you, Jet, and I know we'll want to have you back. Jet Whitehead, all the way from Michigan, the Poetry Jet, has been our guest today. Stay tuned for one last word about next week's show coming up on The Collector Show with me, Harold Nickel. Well, as I said in the intro, we're trying to book an interview about pedal cars and an exhibit at a museum about pedal cars with the man curating that exhibit. And I'm really hopeful of getting that together. But if that doesn't come together, we will come up with something interesting to talk about in the world of collecting next week here on the Collector's Show. If you haven't already done so, bookmark collectorsshow.org, which is our official website. One thing I wanted to mention also, because of some technical issues and personal scheduling issues, we missed a couple of shows during March, and I do apologize for that. I'm hopeful that technology and the calendar can be both managed so that we don't miss shows. So my apologies to those of you who were hoping for programs that weren't there. We'll do better. Everything is a learning opportunity. As usual, thanks for listening to the Collector Show. Tell your friends and come back here to Web Talk Radio again next week for more from the world of collecting. I'm Harold Nickel. Thanks for listening.